Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, tonight to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen over in Studio A, and in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Real good. Donald, you took us back in time. I thought I was standing on the corner of Russell and Plymouth Avenue about 30 years ago as a young group, and that included the legend known as Prince. We're playing. A bunch of young men in those days used to play there at a house there on the corner. Brought back memories, man, you know, of another era. Of course, that was back in the days when Minneapolis was fairly safe. Argument was settled by, you know, fist-to-fist combat, and that was the end of it. But, hey, things have changed. I understand you came in your new armored car? Or what?
Yeah, I had to go over north in my armored car. It was not like it used to be. You know, you got to be careful when you go over there and deal with this stuff. Because there's all kinds of craziness going on.
Well, it's north and south, man. We have a young African-American father in the hospital right now, shot two nights ago in front of his home after leaving the hospital, after visiting his 11-month-old daughter who had just had a kidney transplant, shot in the chest. He's still with us. A couple more shooting victims. By the way, Don, for our listening audience, domestic and international, though this is not like Chicago, but proportionally it is, 6 homicides in the last 8 days here in Minneapolis.
Wow, that's a lot.
6 in the last 8, if you will. Seems to be out of control. But I know there's a plan, my brother, and I assume that Black Lives Matter are on the streets and are going to be talking about the importance of Black Lives, or do they do that?
I think they're out on the street, Mr. Harris, wearing out the soles on their shoes, just addressing the people at the street level, at the grassroots level, letting them know that, you know, they care. I'm sure they're out there in full force. Although
okay.
I have
the reason I ask is that I didn't see them, but I assume that it was probably missing them, like, you know, in the movies. I was on one side of the block, and they were over a street over on the other side, I assume. But I'm really getting concerned that I'm not hearing the organizational leadership and NAACP and them speaking out about what we should be doing and how we should be interacting with our young people. This thing is getting a little dangerous. Like I said, 6 homicides in the last 8 days. And I don't know, you know, I understand somebody said to you on a blog posting, what's your answer? I wish we all knew what the answer was, but I've got a pretty good idea on some things that we should have been doing that maybe could have made it a little bit easier to win the appeal. You know what I mean? Winning the appeal means speaking to our young people, male and female. You know what I mean? So anyways, a lot of trauma and et cetera. A lot of funerals, a lot of wakes going on, if you will. A lot of gunfire this last night and into the early morning. Our most recent shooting, I mean, as we know it right now, officially was at 3 a.m. this morning here in the Twin Cities. Not Twin Cities, right here in Minneapolis. What am I talking about?
Mm-hmm.
So we got those kinds of things going. But what do we got tonight, Mr. Allen? I know we're going to take a look at Spokane, Washington, the NAACP, and does your race matter? Oops.
Yeah.
So what we got, man? You know.
Well, you know, there's a lot of controversy going on with this Rachel Dozell out of Spokane, Washington, who was the president of the Spokane branch of the NAACP, identifying as a black woman, and she was kind of outed by the local and national media. I think she's done almost every talk show, Mr. Edwards, but you know, there was a piece from The View with Whoopi Goldberg kind of talking about it, and it's a couple minutes. I'd just like to go ahead and play that to just kick it off.
Let's get to it. Let's have it.
Okay.
We have to start with Rachel Dolezal. She's the leader of the Spokane, Washington NAACP. She's under fire right now for posing as a black woman. Here's what she said when she was confronted by a reporter.
Okay. I was wondering if your dad really is an African-American man.
That's a very, I don't know what you're implying.
Are you African-American?
I don't understand the question of, I did tell you that, yes, that's my dad. And he was unable to come in January.
Are your parents, are they white?
No, she was just outed, first outed by her white parents and then by her black adopted brothers, and they spoke out to claiming she asked them not to blow her cover. And folks are kind of trying to figure out what this is all about. Why?
I don't understand, because the NAACP welcomes all nationalities mm-hmm. and races to mm-hmm. to help promote African Americans here,
and also,
I understand that she was lying about it, but what I'm saying, there was no need for her to lie to work on behalf of the NAACP.
But I think
so. That's what I'm saying.
What mm-hmm. she was saying too is that she has different races inside of her, mingling and melding. Everybody's from Africa, pretty
original.
Much.
Right,
you know,
I
talked about this later.
Right.
People got mad at me because I couldn't remember continent and you know state or whatever. But thank you. Cause, see, I don't remember it now. But everybody has some type of African blood inside of them. And what makes a black person? Just your skin?
Hold
like,
on a
what
minute. Would you look at pictures
person?
Of her? Because she actually, her first marriage was to an African-American guy. She is whiter and blonder than Nicole. She is so white in those pictures. And it's like, I know what you're saying. I mean, I don't know. I did a DNA test. I didn't have any blood coming back from Africa, which bothered me because I like to also feel connected to my black friends. And I mean, also, if I would have known that I could go black, I mean, think about how thin I would look black, Nicole. That's an immediate 15 pounds off right there. Okay?
I don't know why everyone's picking on me. Can I just say, though, the reaction from African American commentators has been harsh. I mean, are you mad at
me? Listen, I'm not mad at anybody. Look, if she, just like. People say, I feel like I'm a man, I feel like I'm a woman, I feel like I'm this, she feels like a black woman, she wants to be a black woman, fine. Everything that comes with that, she is prepared for, okay? Okay? Because you don't see a lot of, people, you know.
My husband says that about being Jewish. He's Jewish, and he's like, you want to convert? Come on in.
Yeah, but being Jewish is very easy. Like, you can...
And that was the interview, Mr. Edwards, on The View a day before yesterday with Whoopi Goldberg in support of Rachel Dolezal.
Yeah, and by the way, clear for our listening audience, both domestic and international, Rachel was not there, but they were talking about on the program. Let me do this, Mr. Allen, as a historian, mm-hmm. because I have been on top of researching this over the last week. Also, I talked with a friend and associate of mine that I worked on and worked with him a couple years ago on some matters in Idaho, Brother Wilburn, who is just actually the past president of the NAACP of Greater Spokane, if you will. A couple of things that were not brought out, and I'm not sure that Whoopi and her group were actually being disingenuous, and it's the following. Number one, Rachel, well, the reporter that you heard, what Don Lennon and others failed to reveal was mm-hmm. that reporter was with CNN, and he had been dogging Rachel for a number of days at the encouragement of the Spokane Police Department, understanding that Rachel had been appointed to the Spokane Police Commission there in Spokane and had been a longtime fighter for the rights of the African American community, and et cetera. Number 2, 3, 4, and 5 are the following. There is some controversy now coming out of Montana. Her parents live in a place called Troy, Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some question now about if, in fact, Ruth Ann Dossell is really the birth mother of her. They said that they, Don Lennon and CNN said that they were shown a birth certificate. There are some questions now in Montana. The Secretary of State of Montana is being asked to examine documents that that may indicate that that Rachel was adopted almost immediately after birth, if you will. Now, that's one part of it. Number two, there was a statement about that her foster care, see, they weren't her stepbrothers in the sense that they were her foster care stepbrothers. But that wasn't a factual statement because not all of the African-Americans, male and female, who had been put into foster care with this family who has made a lot of money. You know, mommy and daddy have made a lot of money. They have a beautiful home there in Troy, Montana. In 2010, this is for our listening audience, anyone welcome to call in after we review and dissect this situation. In 2010, one of the black foster care males, who would technically be Rachel's brother, filed a complaint and a lawsuit with the help of his sister, Rachel, in the District Court of Washington there in Spokane County. Well, by the way, black population in Spokane County and Spokane, 1.9%, Don. That should raise another question later on in this broadcast about her election and how it was that so many people really didn't know her. If you listened to CNN and you heard the statement from The View yesterday that a lot of black commentators led by Don Lennon and CNN have been extremely harsh. In fact, Montel Williams told a joke that I thought was kind of tasteless last night on Don Lemon's program. And Don Lemon did something I've never seen a professional communicator do. He just absolutely went hysterical, you know, laughing and cackling and giggling and snotting all over himself, which the statement by Montel was not necessarily appropriate. Now, in 2010, one of her foster care stepbrothers, petitioned the court for emancipation. A lot of people who are not aware of the legal system and legal terminology maybe don't know about that, but you can do that, and that sometimes happens. In the petition, the foster care brother of Rachel, who had been placed, not adopted, placed in the home of the parents of who say they are Rachel's biological parents, he maintained in his petition to the district court in Spokane that he had been subject to abuse. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Which is something that Rachel had said had been happening to her before she was 14 or 15, if you will, and had raised questions about the loving, tender care of the people that say that they were her biological parents. They were not the biological parents, clearly, of the young African-American, Calvin, I understand it may have been his name, who raised the question in the petition. Now, The State Department of Human Services in Washington could not resolve the situation, and the young man, through Rachel, indicated he wanted to go to trial. Rachel had already given a deposition talking in terms of the hostility that was displayed towards him and other black foster care children in the custody of, quote-unquote, her allegedly biological parents residing in Troy, Montana. Seeing that this thing was getting ready to go to trial and that the issue of what the abuse centered around was interesting, Mr. Allen, and to our listening audience, the abuse centered around disciplinary action growing out of the failure of the young man to embrace the religion of the biological parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes very interesting because the father, the so-called biological father of Rachel, is a survivalist. If you are aware of the survivalist movement in that part of America, Montana, Idaho, Eastern Washington, and et cetera, they are some people that can be very unpleasant to people of color, okay? There are documents on file in the Montana court system that indicates some questionable conduct. All right. Now, consequently, the district court in Spokane, Washington, in 2010, based on the petition, awarded guardianship, or what is called guardium ad litem, to Rachel. Now, mm-hmm. she testified against her parents and testified against their conduct and their biases and et cetera. Some maintain that once CNN and Don Lemon and others got a hold of the parents, that's when the decision was made by the parents that they would expose her, quote unquote. But you will not find, unless you go to the court documents in Spokane, Washington, you will not find the kind of information that we're discussing here right now. All right? This becomes crucial. Now we go to the question and final, is that Brother Wilborn in Spokane indicates in three interviews in the last 2 days that the most important thing, and he was joined by President Brooks of the National NAACP. You know, we've been quite critical of the National NAACP, but we must be fair-minded here, Mr. L.
Uh-huh.
President Brooks indicated that they weren't concerned about her race, that it was unfortunate that there was some kind of clear misunderstanding, but what they were concerned with was the commitment to the mission of the NAACP and the results of one's commitment of leadership to the NAACP. And it was quite clear that when the membership of the Spokane NAACP 6 months ago, actually 7 months ago, voted to bring her in as president, that they must not have had a problem with it. And contrary to what is being said, a lot of people knew that certainly she was of mixed race, okay? And I'm not sure that the necessary DNA has been done. Now, when she filled out the application to serve on the independent, quote-unquote, Spokane Police Commission, she indicated her race as the following, Mr. Allen: African-American, Native American, and white, okay? Now, I have to say on a personal note here, I am of that same mixture, if you will, and you probably are also, though it's none of my business, and you and I are partners and co-hosts, but it's still none of my business, but I am African-American, Native American, and white blood, and I had a discussion yesterday with an expert on race, and one of the things that we discussed was that one of the races that has no problem with you, if you decide to indicate that you are of that particular race and religion, are the Jewish community. If I declared and accepted Judaism as of right now and called myself a Jew, I would not be denounced by the Jewish community.
No, not at all. Not in the least bit.
Yes, sir. It is a part of the doctrine. So what I would encourage many in our listening audience and those that are in the queue and have their computers, you may want to try to access the court files out of Spokane County on the litigation, petition that was filed in 2010, the determination by the court awarding custodial custody to Rachel of her quote-unquote stepbrother, and et cetera. Let me also say this. The record in Montana also indicates that these parents have a history of if they decide that there is a level of rejection of their religion and their philosophy, which is rather interesting, much of it tied to the Mormon church and to the Evangelical church, that these families have a history, this mother and father, allegedly, of Rachel have a history of banishing the children from the home and placing them in custodial control. You know what custodial control means?
Yes.
They put you in a halfway house. Okay?
Yep.
Now, these are things that have not been discussed in the whole issue of the legitimacy of Rachel. Who is she, what is she, and et cetera. And as I said before, there's an issue right now as we speak in Montana about the fact of if Ruth Ann De La Salle is her actual birth mother. Folks are playing this game. And, of course, here in Minneapolis, we had an immediate denunciation of her by the president of the Minneapolis NAACP. I mean, that's her constitutional right. You know, she's certainly a lawyer. Well, she's more of a law professor. But I would have thought that folks would have spent a little bit more time getting all of the facts, because it is not true what was said on The View that we just played, that all of her stepbrothers or foster brothers and sisters, they were also young ladies, had all denounced her. That is not true, Mr. Allen.
Mm.
I would also refer any references that people want to make to the major white newspaper in Spokane, Washington, who have ran a couple of very, very interesting articles and series of articles in the last 6 or 7 days.
Oh, yes, this is it's getting nuts out here with the people, Mr. Edwards, that are actually, especially on social media, that are actually just going after her, you know, with no empirical proof about anything other than the headline they read, not the story, just the headline.
Absolutely, Mr. Allen, and I have to tell you that I had to kind of hit my own self when I initially heard about it. I kind of went just like anybody else. I said, well, you know, how dare her? How can she say that? But then I had to remember my own lineage, okay? I had to remember, I and others like us certainly didn't have anything to do. In fact, it's a part of the dark history of America. We certainly didn't encourage our women of color to enter into non-consensual sex that led, quote-unquote, to this amalgamation and mixture of blood and et cetera. Also, let me say this, I think this is important if one wants to really get down into the scientific. You know, on this planet that we live on, where and what is the place of origin of the human race?
Africa.
What'd you say?
I didn't hear your voice. The motherland, Africa.
In a country we now call Tanzania, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
That's the thing that amazes me, because in many respects we are all of the same blood because of how we began to fan out, if you will, and leave the confines of our point of origin, you know, just by virtue of climate, you know, complexion and et cetera began to change along certain lines. But, you know, we tend to forget that we are our point of origin. I mean, even white scientists have said this is in fact in black Africa.
Mm.
You know, and I normally don't even bother to get into that, because you start talking in terms of a debate in which you really have to spend an inordinate amount of time reflecting and understanding what is really at play, everything from DNA, you know what I mean, to point of origin and et cetera. But this is just some background for conversation. If anyone desires to call, raise the question. But I would certainly encourage people to go to the website of the Spokane Spokesman newspaper and take a look at some of the stories that have been written, and to also analyze the role of CNN.
And
bastardizing this entire scenario.
And on that note, I would also encourage listeners to go to the Spokane branch of the NAACP online presence, their website.
Very good. Yes, I see it right here. Note was handed to me from your studio. But go ahead. Why don't you enlighten us a little bit? The lines, phone lines are open.
Yes. And we do have two callers, but just let me get this out here, Mr. Edwards. That Spokane website for the NAACP is better than the national office's website. I'm talking about the amount of information, the contacts you can have, the things that they've done, their financial information. You know, we won't get that here with the Minneapolis NAACP. I mean, everything is just out there and transparent. When the meetings are, you can look and see a list of meetings all year where they're going to be at, the banquets they're going to have, selling tickets. I mean, the thought that went into this was just detailed. And
I have to say, Mr. Allen, based on my research and also my conversations with associates in Spokane and with Brother Wilborn, Rachel was responsible for getting this branch back on its feet.
Yeah.
In fact, they had just opened for the first time in history. They had just opened. They have opened their headquarters and now in downtown Spokane, which is something they had been working at for 15 or 20 years in Spokane.
Wow. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from? You're live on the air. Hello, caller. Yes, you.
Is that me?
Yes, you.
Oh, hey, Don, Ron, it's Marvin. I was just listening to the show. I didn't have no comment.
All right, thank you, Marvin. I appreciate it, my brother.
All right. Okay, here we go. Caller, this looks like one of our regulars, Mr. Nelson. Is that you?
This is. How are you guys tonight?
Hey, welcome.
Fine, Brother Nelson. What can we do for you?
Gentlemen, I think that I tuned in a little late here, so I'm not sure exactly where you come down on the whole thing of Rachel, Mr. Edwards. But to me, I think it's just utterly disrespectful the way the sister the fraud she perpetrated on the community, and I don't think it could be looked at any other way.
Wait, hold on. What did she perpetrate on the community?
Let me say it again. If you needed to pretend that you were black to think that you needed to be a part of the movement, that's nothing but fraud.
Let me finish, please.
She no more needed to do that than I need to don a dress and heels to be a part or understand or empathetic of the women's movement. It's disrespectful for her to do that as it would be for me to just don don a dress and wig and go say, hey, I'm a woman too. Now, I'm not Bruce Jenner, by the way.
Hey, Mr. Nelson, you might have to don a wig and a skirt and be in the Minneapolis NAACP.
I know.
But I just want to say that, you know, I don't think that she had a fair shake. I think that this was just some media sensationalism because in the meantime, Mr. Edwards just at the big top of the show said there's been 6 people shot in the last 8 days in the Twin Cities. On a national level, there's been about 18 different shootings, I think about 12 actually murders by law enforcement of people of color.
Right.
So what this did is it was a misdirect from what really was going on. Now, I don't care if she wanted to be a zebra and the job that she was doing in the community, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar tweeted that, you know, you should just let her get back to the work that she was doing. You know, period. I mean, if she wants to be black, I mean, we all know white folks that have a black vernacular on purpose, and it might be fake, but they do it, you know, anyway, and they want to relate.
Exactly.
Okay, so I don't see anything wrong with what Mitch Dozal was doing in Seattle, and if she feels that if she feels that way, and she was actually doing the work, which by the website and the history that she had in Spokane, she was doing the work. I don't see what the problem was.
She did some fantastic deeds, absolutely. But again, all of that now is null and void with her own distractions. Okay, again, I think it's just like a politician going down south during an election year, picking up sometimes a southern drawl, okay? I mean, it happens. I understand that. But again, she deliberately tanned herself and quite poorly. And again, I want to know what was those black folks looking at. And you know what? Here again, I'm about to answer my own question. They probably were looking at the fantastic work that the lady was doing, okay? Because I, but then again, there's so many different black folks, Creole black folks, but I don't know how she could have passed for being black, to be quite honest with you. That wouldn't have passed the sniff test with me. But nevertheless, it was fraud. Her good work now is out of the window because she thought she had to perpetrate a fraud on the community to be a part of the movement. Listen, if she knows her history of the NAACP, she knows that there has always been white individuals helping this great organization, okay? There was white founders along with W.E. Du Bois and Ida B. Wilson. So it was no need for her to do that.
Well, let me ask you a question. There might have been a need for her to do that based on the situation, because you know how black folks get in them organizations. They don't want, you know, the master coming in and telling them nothing. But in this case, you know, she's been related. And one thing I do have to agree with you, just a piece of it, talking to her, hearing her now and seeing her, them black people in Spokane is messed up if they did not know that was a white woman. Okay?
Exactly.
Oh, really? I mean, that's on a serious. But let me ask you this question, Brother Nelson, because it's interesting to hear your reflections, because it's a part of the debate that's going on. Let me ask you a couple questions, though. How long do you think that she had lived in Spokane?
7 years, 5 years.
Nope. Do you know right offhand what the population of African Americans is in Spokane and Spokane County?
I do not.
1.9%.
1.9%.
And the city of Spokane is about 182,000.
Wow.
I now follow Mr. Allen's question to you, because I'm asking and you know, get clarification on the thinking. What do you think the black and white folks in Spokane were thinking about 7 months ago when they elected her as president?
Again, I genuinely believe that some of them, probably because a lot of them are old, we know how, especially here and in Duluth, a lot of the NAACP members are old. There's no the reflection of the NAACP doesn't reflect the newism of the states. But so I believe that those old folks genuinely thought that the
hold up. You got to look at the website and look at the pictures of these people. Okay, there is I'm talking about 18 to 50-year-olds to her back branch. These were not a bunch of folks that were, you know, 80 or 90 years old sitting up and just voting.
Yeah, but
her,
these are people that we know that she grew the membership. She did a fantastic job of that. But originally, she had to get elected by the old guard. And again, mm-hmm. I do believe that they thought that she either was black or they thought that this sister was, you know,
but how would they
pick
that?
She's
lived in Spokane for over 15 years.
Again, I don't know how. If she came to me, she would not have passed for black for me. But again, giving them a benefit of the doubt that they may be senile, I don't know how she passed for black. But again, I'm gonna give them a little bit of a breathing room. And here's the other thing. Even if they did know it, if they blindly elected this woman knowing that she was white and she was
tan.
Wait a minute.
Whoa, when you say blindly. Are you aware that Spokane has probably had a more proportional representation of white presidents during its long history?
Yes.
So
yes.
You need to be careful on that one, because there have been white presidents in Spokane.
I refer
you to the population, 1.9%, which is maybe about 8,000 or 9,000 black folk in that entire county. Because the Spokane NAACP, not only for that county, but also other small African American enclaves in the eastern part of Washington State. But go ahead. But I'm interested in. I mean, how did they set aside the fact that she was saying that she was black, but for some reason or other she was not? And you said you had not heard the first part of the program. Do you?
No, I didn't.
Do you know the history of her parents, of her so-called biological parents?
Well, just a small synopsis of what they gave listening at them the Megyn Kelly interview the other day. I do know that they adopted two black children and that they call themselves Christian and
well, let me say something on that. I'm glad you brought that up. See,
yes, sir?
That was a misnomer for this reason. They didn't adopt them. The children were put in their care as part of foster care.
Okay.
Not adopted. They were foster care, which means you get a whole lot more money. I don't think you
exactly.
get anywhere near the money when you adopt as you do
no, you don't.
When you do foster care. All of those black children that were shown in a picture this afternoon, those are all foster care. Let me ask you this also, Brother Nelson, because you apparently weren't with us. Were you aware of the litigation in the Spokane District Court in 2010 involving Rachel and one of the foster care black male children?
No, sir.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah, this young man, about 13 or 14 at that time, asked that he be emancipated. That is a legal term that is used
right.
in litigation. That he be emancipated from his foster care conditions because of abuse by his white foster care parents. And it was interesting because, and it's in, and we have encouraged listeners tonight to go to their websites, check out the major Spokane paper there, but more importantly, see how much legally they can access the court records. Because in the petition and in the issue of the abuse of this young African-American, he pointed out that he was abused, attacked, criticized, and the issue was around rape, around religion, that he would not accept their religious doctrine, if you will,
right.
which
mm-hmm.
is a really supposed to be a no-no, be it adoption or foster care. Now, one of the things that I told my associate, Mr. Allen, at our meeting earlier today, is that I was taking a look at the home that they were residing in there in Troy, Michigan. I mean, excuse me, Troy,
mm-hmm.
Montana. Troy, Montana. And, man, I'm telling you, that was a beautiful home, well furnished and et cetera. And so I had my people on the West Coast run a diagnostic examination of how much they were being paid to take in these little colored children. Man,
mm-hmm.
they made a lot of money. Now, by the way,
really?
The father, who says he is the biological father of Rachel, he is, and I know you understand this, Brother Nelson, and you just came back out of Texas, he is a survivalist. He's one of them Billy Bobs that go about the countryside. He's and hunting with rifle and bow and arrow and et cetera. In fact, he admitted that at the time that Rachel was born, that he and the wife, they were living in a teepee, living outdoors and et cetera. You know, now that ties in, and in conclusion on this, I don't want to beat it to death, but that ties in to the testimony under oath in the Spokane District Court in 2010. I would encourage you to take two things. Take a look at the court documents, but also all of us need to take a look at her letter of resignation, issued on Monday, on Rachel's
mm-hmm.
letter of resignation. Interesting observations and comments, and I just hope that we get that same kind of commitment here in the Twin Cities, if you know what I mean.
That won't happen. That's why I intend to run against this lady that's all smoke and mirrors here. But here's the thing. The one thing about it, though, is the lady has set a high bar, had set a high benchmark for any president coming behind her because she has done a lot of good work. That's why it's a shame that she did do this because, again, she was doing fantastic work for the community. So it's,
mm-hmm.
it's you don't need to be black to be a part of it. And so that's really sad, you know, that the lady, I almost want to call her sister because of the work she was doing. The lady
mm-hmm.
was doing such fantastic works for the community, and now it's all gone away. Should she have resigned? Absolutely. She would
mm-hmm.
not only disgraced herself, but she disgraced her chapter of the organization, as you just said, Mr. Edwards, that there has been white presidents. And so by her, if she did her due diligence, she should have known this, and so she should have known she didn't have to go about becoming president this way, especially in that neck of the woods. This ain't Minneapolis. In that neck of the woods, you don't need to be black to be the president. So I think it speaks to her mental instabilities. And I've watched her interview with Melissa Harris Perry, The way the lady answers questions when she's asked, do you identify, the way she asks, and she says she identifies herself as black. Well, I identify myself as a tall, rich black man, and I ain't that either, okay? So I think that, again, this lady has some mental incapacities that needs to be dealt with, and I really don't want to hear black folks justifying because the lady did good work for her inappropriate behavior. It's simply wrong, period. Around here, they bash a pastor and other folks for stealing money, okay? But it's okay. Let's let this lady slide for perpetrating fraud because she does such good work. Absolutely not. She needs to go, and hopefully her successor can continue the good work for those people in the community because, again, that's who's suffering now, is the people in the community. Will someone continue to follow to do the good works that this lady was doing? I don't know, but it's sad that she's put that chapter in this position.
But I think you're missing a huge point here. Her position as president of the Spokane NAACP was not a paid position. She was volunteer.
It's a voluntary. It's all voluntary. That's what I'm saying. So again,
well, be careful now. It's all volunteering except in some of the bigger cities, Los Angeles, Detroit, Chicago, New York, and Atlanta. The presidents, quote unquote, there is executive directors who report to the president are paid. Some of your bigger affiliates in the United States do have paid staff. So you want to be careful when you talk in terms of the volunteerism. But probably 85% of the NAACP branches in America, everything is volunteer. But there are some biggies. There are some biggies, and we just named some of them, in which people are making real nice salaries.
Can you trust her to go
back? In her
back,
case, she wasn't making a dime. But go ahead.
Can you trust her, even if she didn't resign, could you trust her to go back and do the work of the community, the will of the community? Again, we just highlighted some of the great things, the fact that it is a volunteer position. And so that means this woman was giving she was giving her all to it, okay? So how do you trust her to go back and be an officer of the people? You can't. You simply can't because now everything that would come out of her mouth to me, I would think, would be fraud or would be a lie. And she didn't have to do it. She did this to herself. And I hate that she's dividing the community now because you got some of them folks saying that she did such good things and are blindly dismissing the fact that what she did because of the good works. But I can't blame them. If she helped you get your lights turned on and your rent paid, I don't blame you for having on your good graces. But I also think that we need to look at the fact that what she did meant that she didn't give a damn about the community more than she did about herself.
Okay, all right. Well, like I said, that's one of the things about freedom in America, that we have those opinions and expressions. All right, Brother Nelson. Mr. Brother Allen, you have anything else? But I think Brother Nelson has opened up the door to hear what people's expressions are.
Yeah, and he laid it out, and I'll put you back in the queue there, Brother Nelson. Thanks.
Appreciate
all right,
thank
Brother
you.
Nelson. Stay with us, because we got some other stuff for you. Yeah.
Will
okay.
do, please. Put me in the queue.
All right,
thank you,
sir. Okay. Phone lines are open, Mr. Allen. Get the phone lines are open.
347.
Interesting observation. I do see that people are kind of saying that everything that she had done was for naught. So you keep that in mind.
And I'm just getting him set up here. Okay. Yeah, Mr. Edwards, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, the number is 347-426-3904. If you want to comment on the Rachel Dolezal spectacle, for, against, and why? Just don't come to us with no superficial stuff that you read on a headline. And, Mr. Edwards, I just want to add this, too. I see a lot of folks that you could just tell they didn't read in depth, and they're just following the lead of the mainstream media, who's ever talking at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't really look at this, you know, a little bit deeper than what you're being told, it's pretty interesting. It is pretty interesting of what's going on.
Let me say this also, because I know there are folks out there that have been reading what. Now, even my friend Joe, what you call it, Black Radio, raised the question about her suing Howard, and she was asked that question on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I when I heard that also, I said, okay, you know, why did she sue? And she indicated that she had sued out of a frustration and an economic situation because, see, she had been awarded a scholarship to come to Howard. And she had got
mm-hmm.
there, and she had applied for another scholarship when she got ready to do her graduate work. And a consular, and this is, was in the court records, so the case was ultimately dismissed by the federal court there in Washington, D.C., he had told her that he understood she was white and that she could get the money somewhere else kind of thing, which is not good.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of put the institution on the spot. I mean, it's the same doctrine as if at, let's say, University of Minnesota, a black student was told that, well, you can get scholarship money from one of your black organizations or black millionaires or something like that. You know what I'm saying? That
mm-hmm.
that cut across the law. So she admitted that she had filed a lawsuit. It was ultimately dismissed. She said she did it out of frustration and the fact that she was already married to a gentleman by the name of Moore, because actually her legal name now is Rachel Moore. People
uh-huh.
keep talking about Dolezal, which is that in itself has an interesting history as it pertains to her parents and the issues that emerged in 2010 in the court case in Spokane County when her parents were forced to relinquish stewardship, if you will, or custody of a young African-American who had been brought in under the foster care doctrine. So she confirmed that she thought that was not the best thing she should have done, but she was frustrated. There was no food in the cupboard and et cetera, and she felt that that Howard had stiffed her, though she maintains this. She maintains that it was amazing to her that they said to her that she was white, because that was never put down on any document that was ever given to Howard.
Ooh, interesting.
And she felt it had a lot to do with her appearance and et cetera. But let me say this, you know, and you know, I know this upset some of the folks. I watched her in an interview with Melissa Perry, Harris Perry, right? You know Melissa.
Yep.
You know, always on MSNBC, Mr. Allen?
Yes, yes, I know.
With
MSNBC.
All those corn rolls and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Melissa was interviewing her yesterday. I didn't recognize Melissa, man. Melissa had hair down to her shoulders, you know, different kind of glasses and et cetera. In fact, I thought roles had been reversed because Rachel was sitting across from her with a fro, and Melissa had, you know, looked like Caucasian hair. I mean, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I kind of looked at that and I said, wow, I wonder what that, you know, how that came about, because Melissa had really created a significant presence at MSNBC by her ethnicity and blackness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, she sure didn't look like it yesterday.
Oh, wow.
But now, that should not be subject to criticism, right? Because any
That's
person
not.
Has the right to look like they want to look, and in some cases, say what it is they think they are.
Yep. And, Mr. Edwards, we have a caller.
Oh, let's get the caller.
Okay. Let's warm it up here. We're having a caller. You're live on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, is this me?
Yes,
it's you. Yes, it's you. You're on. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm listening to the discussion about, you know, the lady, the NAACP president. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, being an African-American woman, I think that we have to be aware that this opens up a discussion for a lot of things. For one thing, when we think about, you know, light skin versus dark skin, you know, and
we think about
the challenges of a black woman versus a white woman that wants to, you know, embrace our culture, you know, which is not a problem. But then sometimes we have this relationship problem when it comes to the black woman and the white woman. So we have to be very careful with this. This opens up a discussion that only comes from mature educational people that can really, really get to the root of what's going on, because we have been lied to, but at the same time, we welcome anyone that want to embrace us. You know, the whole world is embracing us. So we don't have a problem with that, but then this does says a lot about, you know, how are we going to talk about, you know, this issue when we have transgenders, when we have men that's coming out that want to be women. You know, I want to say today that I was in the bathroom and I heard some men talking in the bathroom.
That's not funny, dear, but I know what you're getting ready to say. Go ahead.
I said, is that a man? You know, and they hurried up and ran out. But I had to think, like, well, you know, what if this was a man that was dressed like a woman that's talking like a man? Should I feel disrespected? Should I get prepared to sue somebody up in here? You know,
your point's well taken. But let me cut to a couple questions, because I have a pretty good idea who you are, and I know you're a person who is definitely enlightened and et cetera. Our previous caller, who we know and et cetera, Mr. Allen and myself, but we have been asking the question, if all of the good work that Rachel has done for a decade in Spokane and for the NAACP, should that be just kind of pushed to the side and discarded and redacted and et cetera? I mean, and can you, what is your thinking about what her members were thinking about when they elected her as their president? Can you have any thinking on that?
Well, one thing I did hear you say was that you did talk about the population. So maybe
yes, 1.9.
The majority won, and therefore she looked more like the majority than the minority. So that's probably why it was so easy for her to get in, I would assume. But then one thing when it comes not only to the population but the economics of the black people there, because, you know, when it comes to our people, we're more willing, that's why I said the education, we're more willing to accept someone with a lighter skin than a darker skin. So maybe her skin tone, being that we all are from Africa, but her tone itself probably got her somewhere to where a lot of our dark-skinned people just were so happy to accept her because she is embracing our culture so well, you know, and we don't get that a lot from a black woman, because we know statistically black women have issues, you know, so it's kind of real deep, you know, when you look into it, like when you really look at it.
Okay, but now let me go to the question, though. Does that mean that we dismiss the efforts and the work that she had done for over a decade for the NAACP of Spokane, Washington? Now, by the way, she also, Mr. Allen, we talked about in the production meeting, she also lost her part-time job at Eastern Washington University. I was surprised, but then when I found out it was part-time, I realized that tenure was not an issue. Now, caller, how should we deal with her legacy and the things that she did? Should we just say that we want to just cast all that out, complaints that we have received here at the Spokane NAACP, that we dismiss them because she had a significant role in the strategy, the successful strategy of these particular issues, economic, educational, public safety, and et cetera? How say you on that?
Well, I don't think that we should just erase that, because she did work hard for that. So she earned that. We shouldn't. It's not our position to take that away from her, because we'll be taking more than just her title or whatever that is. She worked hard for that, and if she worked on behalf of my people, then I have no problem with that. And if she want to continue to work on behalf of my people, I will not have a problem with that. If she want to continue to look the way she look and wear the dreads and all that, I will not have a problem with that as well.
All right, now let me ask you a question, a final question for me on that, because it's something we stayed away from, and we actually should have asked it of the first caller and some of the conversations I heard. Should we embrace forgiveness here? Can we forgive a person for a mistake, or what is your thinking there?
Well, majority of us are spiritual beings, so why not?
Okay, all right, you're on top of your game. I just wanted to ask, because I have not heard in all of the national discussion caller and Mr. Allen and our listening audience, I've heard no one talk in terms of forgiveness.
Well, I forgive her. I don't think that she really did anything wrong or harmful to my people, our children, our community. So there's no reason for me to condemn her.
All right. All right. I commend you for that. And you're probably one of the first people on any kind of broadcast that has, number one, been asked the question and I think gave an appropriate response. Because I repeat again, Mr. Allen, I have heard no one talk about, and particularly Don Lennon, I've heard no one in CNN, an example, talk in terms of the importance of forgiveness. Thank you.
Nope. Thank you. Thank you for the call.
All right.
Material witness on an aggravated battery with a handgun, and they believe this might be in retaliation to her testimony.
Hey, Mr. Edwards.
I kind of heard that. I thought that that was the NSA. Mr. Allen?
No. There was there's something going on in a school, and if this police officer hadn't have been there, it would have escalated to something else. And so that was just a little call that came through real quick so we could hear that. You know, this police officer, you know, who is happy to be in the Minneapolis public schools.
Now, this comes at a time when some of our leadership organizations indicated that we didn't need law enforcement officers in our public school. That motion was defeated a week ago this past Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken.
You're absolutely correct.
Boy, that was an interesting call that you piped through.
I had to pipe that through. I had that, you know, kind of save waiting in the queue because
we have some
folks in the queue that are just listening today that were very interested in the title of the program today, which was Minneapolis Police Federation Crushes Black Lives Matters and NAACP Organizer. And let
me speak to that for our listeners in the queue and anyone that chooses to dial the number and call us. I was quite surprised at the strategy that was put together by the Police Federation under a very conservative new leadership, which I had said to you in private conversations that it was going to be interesting. The Police Federation did their homework going into the board meeting last Tuesday evening at the district headquarters at 1250 West Broadway. And apparently the NAACP's leadership and others did not see a couple things coming. Number one, they didn't see former Mayor R.T. Ryback, who came in, and to the surprise of the NAACP, Black Lives Matter, and a couple of other groups, did not see that the former mayor, liberal, if I remember correctly, 12-year, three-term mayor in the city of Minneapolis, defended the presence of police in the school and reminded board member Don Samuels, who was a former three-term city council member before he left the council to run for another office, and so he was not able to protect his franchise, but then turned around and got elected in an off year to the school board. And the mayor reminded him of a couple of situations when R.T. Ryback was mayor and Don Samuels was a member of the city council, that they had worked together to get the police back into the schools. This would have been about a decade ago, because of the level of violence and problems that were going on in the schools. And that certainly helped former council, now school board member, Samuels to vote in the affirmative, and the vote, by the way, was 7-1-1. And the Federation is taking absolute credit for putting together a master plan and basically taking the position that the NAACP was not politically, this is a statement, was not politically seasoned enough to go up against them. And that's kind of scary because there are some additional issues coming up, including the body cameras, which the individuals, the people, the organizations that said they're in support of the body cameras on police officers did not come back into the council chambers that Wednesday, again of last week, when the council very quietly move the agenda and put that matter off for at least another 6 months to 7 months to probably a year. And so the Federation analyzed the lack of attention, if you will, and put together their strategy and went in. I mean, I can't criticize you, my friend, went mm-hmm. in and crushed the African-American community,
oh, yeah.
per se, that was in favor of putting police out of the schools.
Yes. I just remember, Mr. Edwards, you know, I am a product of the Minneapolis public school system, and I remember from 1971 to 1979, every Bancroft Elementary, Bryant Junior High, Ramsey Junior High, Central High School, there was always a plainclothes police officer. Everyone knew he was a police officer. That was clear, you know, and
mm-hmm.
walked around that served as an assistant coach sometimes for the basketball team, football team, volleyball teams, I mean, hockey, everything, and who was there to make sure that, you know, no one got hurt inside the school.
Okay,
But the stigma that Black Lives Matters and these other folks are putting on police officers, that they all are bad, that they are evil, and they are brainwashing some of these followers to really believe that, and believe that we don't need police officers, at least one in every school, which we do. And so I'm glad that there was a show of solidarity between the board, school board members, and former Mayor R.P. Ryback to just show up, just to tell these people that, you know, you're just not going to have everywhere you want it. You know, whatever.
Mr. Allen, I have to say to you, based on the conversations that I am privy to, that the Federation leadership under its new president had it all figured out, man. They had gone and done their homework. And one of the things that I was taught many, many years ago as an elder, which, you know, I understand there's no respect for black elders in this community of certain political persuasions. But one of the things that I was always taught, that when you get ready to get into a cat fight, if you will, make sure that you know how many cats is getting ready to jump on you, okay?
Yeah.
And I was surprised when I heard the actual count that evening that it was so decisive. And I can tell you that the president of the Federation and his exec committee are kind of smiling, and they have also indicated that they are preparing to do battle with Black Lives Matter and et cetera. In fact, they've taken up the issue, particularly with the latest shooting this morning in Minneapolis, that one of the soft spots of the African-American argument as it pertains to anything is that we, well, organizations representing us have a vulnerability spot, a soft spot, a hidden spot, if you will, because they have no interest in talking about the issue that all Black Lives Matter. And so the Police Federation has taken the position, get this now, get this, that they are more concerned, irrespective of some of the sensational situations that have taken Tysel Nelson, if you will, T.T. Franklin, events such as that, that they are more committed to the safety of the African-American community as it pertains to Black Lives Do Matter than organizations that say that they are committed to that and yet do nothing. Now, I don't buy that argument, but I got to tell you, it's beginning to resonate with a broad section of the white community, and they're raising the question back to us in the African American community. Well, when are you people, you know, kind of a famous saying, when are you people going to speak out about the black on black violence and the fact that it appears that a black life does not matter to another black person? And I'm deeply offended by that, but you know, a observation is what it is. It is an observation, and if it is an observation that is cemented in historical reflection and truth, then you got a problem.
I agree. I agree 100%. Yeah, I've been in some texts, and it was really funny, Mr. Edwards, because I've been asking people just to call into the show.
Sure.
So I have a young lady just sent me a little text, says, you get paid by Whitey.
Gets paid by Whitey. Who gets paid by Whitey? I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, they said, they asked me, did I get paid? And I had
You're talking about my co-host, Mr. Allen. Or do you get paid by Whitey? Okay.
Yeah. And so
I've heard
that since
the 1960s, but go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm looking at it, and I'm saying, well, is there a Blackie hired? Is there a black in this town hiring folks, giving them jobs at livable wages that you could pay the mortgage, your car note, and raise a family and take trips whenever you want to? Tell me one, and I'll go work for Blackie. Until then, I'm going to earn any position that I choose. I'm going to close my eyes and choose and go do it. Period.
Okay.
You work for Whitey.
Yeah. We used to call it the man. Did you work for the man? I mean, but now what does that? I have to ask this question. Maybe they'll text you back. So what does that have to do about the discussion that has ranged from are we about, you know, the art of forgiveness? How and should you dismiss the work of a human being and et cetera? In fact, let me make a suggestion also that some of these folks need to go back and take a look at the events in 1905, I know that's a long time for a lot of folks, when the gathering of Negroes and Caucasians or European Americans took place in a place called Niagara Falls, New York, to form the Niagara Movement, which 5 years later became the NAACP, or the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. We kind of probably need to kind of be careful about Whitey, you know, the man, if you will, and et cetera, because there was a period of time in this country, maybe we weren't all, you know, necessarily on satisfied with it, et cetera, when the two nations, black and white, if you will, did try to work closely to deal with the obstructions that were in place, starting with, you know, segregation and et cetera. And I mean real segregation. I'm talking about segregation that had you riding on the back of the streetcar, not being able to go to the movie theater, you know what I mean? I saw a couple of movies, Mr. Allen, I talked about it on my television program this past Sunday. One was called A Thousand Black Men Named George. Excellent, excellent movie about the sleeping car porters and the brotherhood of sleeping car porters. Excellent movie. And the other one was Ragtime with the late Rollins and the late James Cagney. Excellent, excellent movie. Two excellent movies that I think were the rare productions out of Hollywood really looking at the serious issues of race in America, if you will. I would kind of hope that some of our young people, particularly in the absence of a Black History Museum, that we would kind of go back and maybe rediscover our history and the importance of it and the kind of things that really happened in America that made it possible for the U's and I's and a whole lot of others to be on radio, television, have newspaper columns, but also, you know, work some of these big jobs and et cetera, be elected to positions of power, including ultimately the ultimate position, President of these United States, if you will. But I don't know. To some degree, we've seemed to have lost that perspective, need to kind of get it back, because that's one of the things that is being talked about in Spokane, because the people there maintain that, you know, they're kind of out there in the white wilderness, if you will. If you've ever been out there in eastern Washington, Spokane's a beautiful town, Don, as I told you, beautiful town, good people. Good friend of mine, Bob Minix, the athletic director at Florida State, big white institution, came from there, and we became real friends in the 1980s doing investigations of the University of Minnesota and its treatment. Oops. Of African Americans. But anyways, I just kind of want to remind us, Matt, we probably need to take a look and remind ourselves of our history. You know what I'm saying?
Since Arrows, I agree 100% with you. I agree.
We're starting to run down. We're really gone. We got about 20 minutes. Again, those phone lines are open. You know, don't just text.
feel free to pick up the phone and ask us the questions. You know, we've given out some information. We've not spent as much time as we should with regards to the violence. It's interesting to hear what some people's observations are. As we said, and we haven't got a single call on it, in our beloved Shangri-La, if you will, we've had 6 African-Americans either shot or stabbed to death in 8 days. 6 of our people.
Now, Mr. Edwards, let me ask you a question. Now, aren't there some resources going out? Because, matter of fact, Mr. Edwards, let me pull this up real quick. Someone sent me something today that was supposed to – let me just – here, I'm going to grab it on the screen here and shoot it over to your screen, so I'm going to read it, so folks.
Okay, okay.
It says a 45-day review and comment period for a neighborhood organization. On May 19th, 2015, the Neighborhood Community Relations Department, the NCR, initiated a 45-day review and comment period for the draft of Blueprint for Equitable Engagement. The Blueprint for Equitable Engagement is a multi-year strategic action to ensure equitable community engagement system for the city of Minneapolis and to guide the work of the NCR and the Neighborhood Community Engagement Commission through 2020.
Okay.
And it says here, city of Minneapolis is growing, blah, blah. Yeah, we know it's growing. So it's offering you to provide your comments by July 3rd, 2015, to the Crown Roller Building, Suite 425. And so I'm going to see what the Blueprint of Equity and Engagement is about. It's a multi-year strategy to innovate and equitable engagement assistance for the city of Minneapolis. This is not the fair equity, fair and just opportunities for outcomes for all people, racial equity, development of policies, practices, and strategic investments to reverse the racial disparities. Now, this is not from the Department of Civil Rights.
No, that's from Craig Taylor's operation there in the Crown Building. Yeah, you remember Mr. Craig Taylor. He was the administrator at UROC. And formerly before that, he was an administrator at the University of Minnesota. He's now the top man in that particular area. I'd like to ask the question of he and the mayor and others, how many African-Americans have received significant contracts for the work both on the Nicollet Mall and the so-called highly touted Downtown East, which is also the area in which the People's Stadium, the Viking Stadium, actually, $1.6 billion project. You know, I hear you reading kind of the same language and rhetoric that we've heard for so long.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds good, man, but when the statistical data comes in from the Department of Labor, the federal government, we're always at the bottom. I'm talking the African American, you know. And so, you know, maybe we need to, you know, find some real black folk to speak out for us here in Minneapolis. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Mr. Harris, we have a caller, too.
Let's get the caller. Let's get the caller.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Mm-hmm. This is Roxanne.
Hey, Mrs. Ryan, how you doing?
How you doing?
Okay.
I didn't know what we were talking about, though, at the time.
Well, no. I was reading your Facebook post, and you seem upset, and I consider you, you know, one of the realest people kind of around as far as African-American women. I mean, there's a couple that I really, you know, admire, and I know that you do things every year, that you raise your own money, and you just do what you need to do. And it seemed like you were a little bit upset. And I don't want to attack an organization or do anything like that, but I'm going to give you an opportunity to say what you need to say without me or anybody else attacking any one organization or any one individual. But there seems to be a common thread between what you're saying and what I've been saying for a long time. And I just want to get your thoughts. That's all.
Okay. So, and the reason why I don't like to call people out individually is for one, is because we have it hard enough as far as getting resources and having opportunities come to our neighborhood. At least that's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I know we get a lot of money coming through here, so it's not like we don't get any money. But when you compare it to the white counterpoint part, they don't. It's nothing in comparison. Like you said, the jobs that are being given to people to work on the Metrodome or the new stadium, it doesn't compare to the jobs that we're lacking over here, that we need, that we deserve. But also, I know some people who have gotten those jobs, very few, and they're in the workplace, and there's still a matter of racial discrimination, you know, from their their coworkers and from their bosses. And, I mean, I have people who call me all the time and tell me what's going on, but a lot of them are afraid to speak out, and they don't even want me to speak out because they're so afraid, you know? Like, they're just – everybody kind of is afraid. And so that, I think, brings me to what you guys are saying about a lot of people out here are – you know, they talk a good game about wanting to change things around here, but I think a lot of people have this this low victory goals, or they have these low victory goals, almost like they just kind of want to get whatever crumbs they can get. And that's good enough for them, you know, and that'll help them until the next funding cycle. And I don't appreciate that either. Like, I'm, you know, at least I shoot for the stars. And I work with a lot of people who do the same, and I think that that's, I think even if we know that we're not going to eliminate, you know, all the racial disparities and all, you know, the elite plans, if we're not going to, I know that we're not going to make these powers fall down immediately, but at least if we shoot for that, you know, if we make our goals big, you know, we might be able to accomplish much more than if we make our goals small, which to me is like we're chasing for crumbs around here. We're scared to say what I think are the majority of the problems. And I disagree. Sometimes I hear, Don, you talk a lot about black-on-black crime, and I'm confused myself about why, how we can have this one-sided conversation about crimes that happen in our community as if there's no outside influence a part of that.
I have to disagree with that. I think that there are there have been many occasions where the whole issue of outside influence, particularly in the area of drugs and violence, the drugs and et cetera that are coming into this community from other enclaves, the role of the Mexican community, the Chicago pipeline, and et cetera. So that has been talked about. The fact of the matter is a lot of people don't like to talk about drugs because, unfortunately, they have too many members in their family involved in drug activity. And that's a sad commentary because it's become an economic platform, one of the few economic platforms for any kind of economic achievement in the African-American community. When we get ready to have a meaningful discussion about what really facilitates crime, maybe we'll be able to get to solutions.
Well, I think we should talk about that. I think that's I think you made a good point that there needs to be some conversation around maybe the fact that the majority of our community does drugs, and maybe we need to stop looking at drugs as being these few drugs that are the most common drugs, like crack cocaine or meth or whatever else is out there, marijuana, alcohol. All these things are drugs, but there's also other things, you know, out here that are drugs. There's pharmaceutical drugs that you can get over the counter. And a matter of fact, there's a lot of rich people who are very successful who still do drugs. There's a lot of bankers who are snorting cocaine and tricking off hella money. But they're still successful, right? So maybe the issue is not necessarily just drugs, but maybe there's a deeper root issue, like hate. Maybe there's hate for self. That includes the way we treat each other. That includes multitude of factors besides drugs.
Let me add to this. Here's what's happening, and this is just my take, you know, from the right. Okay, and I didn't really get involved with the community at all since 2008 because I didn't want to. I didn't care, and I really, you know, just don't do much now except write stories. But anyway, there's the black community in the Twin Cities. Certain areas are cash crop commodities for people that want to gain some funding from the city, the state, philanthropic organizations, or the private sector. You know, they says, well, we have a high diabetes rate in North Minneapolis, among the black community. Well, don't you know the Minnesota Department of Health has millions of dollars in grants that they can give out for someone to address that? Now, the problem is, let's look at MSure, and I'm not going to call out no single individual. I promised this, that to you in the beginning of this conversation. But MSure dumped a lot, and you know who I'm talking about. MSure dumped a lot of cash into this agency to get brothers and sisters in Minneapolis and the churches and South, North, to get insurance. And their return from the Senate, the Minnesota Senate, they said there's a legislator that said that the return was poor. Now, I got video where I walked up and down Broadway and asked, brother, do you have MSure? You know, out of 25, two of them said they had MSure. You know, and so we have problems like that where people are let generationally using this poor economic, low-income economic standard to go to these people, to go to the mayor and say, oh, mayor, you know, there's been 5 or 6 people shot and killed in North Minneapolis in the last 6 days. Can we get $100,000 to put some people on the street? Now,
right.
Someone benefits that. Someone benefits, and this is a cycle. I've been watching this since 2008. This same cycle goes on over and over and over again. And if you speak up, like, if I say something about somebody, oh, I'm going to get marginalized. Now you this, you this, you this, you that. And if Edward says something, the same thing. But you know what? I don't care because I'm watching these fools in real time. And I mean, this is something next week. I invite you to call in next week so that, you know, we can really get down in the depth with this because we have about 8 minutes left and we have a couple more callers because this is a serious issue that needs to be addressed.
You can get to the other caller. I'll continue to listen.
All right, thank you. All right, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, we need to talk to her, Mr. Edwards. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, this is the gentleman that called about the procurement system, the state procurement system a few weeks ago.
Yes,
we were having a debate. Can you give me an update on what you guys accomplished in the press conference you guys had last Friday?
I know, when you say you guys, you're talking about who? Because I haven't been in any press conference. So who are you talking about?
Mr. Allen.
Oh, Mr. Allen. Okay. Mr. Allen, this question is for you.
I didn't have a press conference. I did not have a press conference. I went and took pictures and made a video of it, but it was not my press conference. And if you saw it, you would know that.
Yes, but what have you guys accomplished?
Who are you talking about?
The people at the organization that had the press conference.
Oh, let's clarify. We got about 6 minutes. The press conference was called by the NAACP State Conference under orders from the National NAACP in Baltimore, and the Council on Black Minnesotans called the press conference. And the media was invited. Mr. Allen is a member, as I am, of the Fourth Estate, and Mr. Allen went over there to it. But you would have to ask those questions. And we've had the chairman was just on three weeks ago, and next time we get him on, we hope, sir, that you're listening and you can, you know, get through and ask him what it is that the Council on Black Minnesotans is doing. And I don't know how you get in touch with the NAACP, but I'm quite sure that they would be prepared to answer what it is that they're doing. As soon as they get a phone that you can call, because we would give you the number over there, but as I understand it right now, maybe someone will quickly text Mr. Allen or myself, there's no phone number for the NAACP. And so now there is a phone number from the Council on Black Minnesotans, sir. I suggest give them a call tomorrow and ask that question to them, and then, hey, feel free to give us a call back next Wednesday.
Okay, one more thing, Mr. Allen. What do you? We didn't finish our conversation last time. What do you think the underlying issue is with the procurement system at the state level, or the county level, or the city level?
Well, the procurement system is tangled because they haven't unbundled some of the contracts, and I feel one of the main things that they could do to help minority vendors from all walks of life is to unbundle the contracts. What happens now is that, you know, the procurement system is limited and it only focuses. It's basically, if you take someone else to dinner, especially MnDOT, MnDOT's hand is all the way in people's pockets. If you, I allege, if you take someone out to dinner and you wine and dine them, and they invite you to these big shindigs, and they submit their bids, usually 9 times out of 10, that contract will fall in the hand of those individuals. So that's a problem. The procurement system, in a short answer, needs to be debundled, where you have people that can clean up, people that can do cement. All that should not go to one company. If it does go to one company ought to be required to debundle it and put it in separate bids and bid it out among qualified vendors in the city. So does that answer your question, sir?
Yes, sir. Very clear.
Okay, well, thank you for calling.
City of Minneapolis.
All right, give us a call next week. We'll deal with that. By the way, there's some changes being made. That's interesting. Give us a call next Wednesday, and we'll talk about some of the changes that are happening inside the city of Minneapolis, because too many tough questions are being asked. Thank you for calling. Okay, we expect to hear back from you next Wednesday.
And we have another caller. Go ahead, sir.
And how much time do we have left quickly, Mr. Allen? About two and a half minutes?
Four minutes. We have four
okay,
minutes.
Okay, caller, go right ahead.
Caller, go ahead.
Hello. Am I on air?
Yes, you are,
M. Yes,
oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Mr. M, how you doing?
Good. This is Mr. M. I'm sorry for the very, very late call, and this has been just such a power-packed, busy week. I mean, with so many things going on, I mean, I know you guys probably talked earlier about Miss Rachel Dozell and the identity crisis.
Yes, we did. Uh-huh.
And I have a lot of things on that. I mean, also, there's been a lot of stuff about our Hennepin County Child Protection. Been in the news.
Sad situation with the death of a three-year-old African-American girl, yes. Mm-hmm.
Very sad situation.
Was supposed to be in protective service. Mm-hmm.
Supposed to be in protective service, and actually there was an expose on the Nancy Grace show on CNN.
What?
Were they
already
they
that quickly? Oh, okay.
Already that quickly. From my sources tell me that she contacted the people at the county, and actually they had County Attorney Mike Freeman on the program. Actually had, well, who's a real grandstander. See, he thinks he's going to follow the footstep of, what is the lady, Ms. Klobuchar.
Klobuchar.
He thinks he can follow
Senator
in that.
Klobuchar, who was the previous county attorney. Mm-hmm.
Previous county attorney, and he thinks he can move into the next step But and I also noticed a comment by Mr. Allen tonight just, you know, about all the killings and things in North Minneapolis. And, you know, and then one of the things I just saw in the paper today about the YMCA in Eden Prairie hooking up a program in the summer in Eden Prairie, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it was for specifically for individuals of an apartment building, and they're doing this in different areas, and it just so happens that in this particular apartment building, and I'm not against anybody, don't misconstrue my comments.
Somali.
But it's
Somali
and Ethiopian, and there's big push, you know, so they have summer programs, they're putting extra money into it. Well, why don't they do that in North Minneapolis where they're having these killings? Maybe these people dying, these kids being left in pools, these kids being beaten. Maybe this would kind of temper those type of things. Do you have any comment on that? I mean, I don't. Maybe I'm off base on that. Maybe I'm being one-sided.
Well, I think that we've talked about it many times. Number one, the African-American community, apparently we have to get some international connections, I guess, to be viewed as important, relevant, and savable, if you will. You know, it's been a long-standing controversy in this state for as long as I can remember, and that goes back a long ways. We are just not important, and we just don't seem to have the clout. These questions are continuously raised, and yet when allocation time comes, it's basically business as usual. But I have to say this, Em, the documentation shows probably in excess of $20 million has been poured into many of our organizations, if you know what I mean. Mm. And we've said it on this program for quite some time that there has to be an accounting of what happened to all that money, particularly when we see this continued violence. And by the way, the number, and we, you know, it could be somebody dead by the end of tonight, but there have been 6 black homicides in the last 8 days, as well as 5 other shootings in which people are in poor to critical condition. So if this was Chicago and it was proportional, if you will, that'd be the equivalent of about 23 people being shot in 8 days.
And what more reason, what more call to action do we need? You know, what more type of, along with the child protection failures, the, you know, not working with the community. I mean, what more call to actions do we need to kind of put our heads together and make some things really happen? Make some things
absolutely
change.
And for African Americans to begin to think in terms of direct action. So, but get back to us next week a little bit earlier because we're out of time. But we'd like to hear your reflections and thoughts, and we'll have some updates.
I certainly will. I'll get back next week.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Mr. Allen, that basically, we're about a minute and a half away, about a minute, if I'm not mistaken. So I think, you know, been a great program. We've got some people hopefully will be calling back with some additional questions. We'll do our homework on this end, if you will. Try to see if we can get some answers from public officials.